Demon Irepit Kalidus, music by Jerzy Orban. I was struck by this piece. It's got a little bit of everything all wrapped into a nice minute and 30 package. Extremely rhythmic, some nice soaring melodies, and it definitely got that that spooky chromaticism in there as well. Tell me about the composer.
He's Hungarian and was teaching at the Liszt School, born in 1947. And he, prior to the loosening of political barriers, his works were caught in the late avant-garde ideas. But once in the early 80s, he was able to get out of Hungary and go, I think it was to England, to a couple of competitions and places where new works were being explored. He realized that his compositional style was a bit out of date at that point. And he completely changed his style in the 80s to be really more tonal and somewhat eclectic, though you will always find in his music a rhythmic drive.
It really comes out just at the very beginning. You hear that very rhythmic writing. And,
The song is very descriptive. The minor second intervals and augmented chords and chromatic scales could represent the artifice the devil uses to deceive and seduce the honorable heart. That's what some people would argue. I think that may be a bit of a stretch, but I do think it is very evocative.
Unicornis Captivator by Ola Jalo. And this is, Ola is only 35 years old and already really established himself as a composer of voice and piano and film. I really hear a kind of a fresh cinematic quality to this piece, but at moments I'm not sure if I'm in the 21st century or the 17th century. It's a neat mix of styles.
Isn't it amazing? It really is a synthesis of sort of Renaissance dance styles, in particular the Alleluias, and a modern take, possibly, of a Palestinian approach to vertical harmonies. I think it works very well as a piece that represents a motet style, but is also an evocative piece, particularly this text from the Engelberg Codex of right around 1400. The unicorn is captured, the light of the phoenix burns out, the hydra fights a crocodile, you know, the slain lion returns to life after 3 days, all of these being medieval metaphors for the struggle between light and darkness, death and resurrection. And so this whole piece evokes that mood, but yet in a what we might consider an ecclesiastical musical setting.
It seems to jump from style to style, period to period. Is that transition difficult from either from the conductor's podium or from the choral standpoint, singing and switching on a dime to the different textures and styles?
I can honestly tell you, given the program that we have here, this is one of those pieces that the singers delight in, because it's not as complex for them to make those switches. They understand the history of it, and so it is more ingrained in their musical language and syntax.
Well, at times listening to Unicornis Captivator, I was hearing more beauty and lyricism in the line than the scary factor, but that was not the case with the next piece in the program, The Tomb at Akersar by Bengt Johansson.
Mm-hmm.
And no question about this being scary. Bengt Johansson really knows the realm of special effects for voice and great variety of textures with the spoken word and really extreme dynamics.
Yeah, this is a very interesting piece. The text comes from Ezra Pound from a collection of works in 1912, a collection of 25 poems. In this, Nikoptis reproaches his mummified body sort of in the tones of a neglected woman. In a historical perspective, the poem really, it's integral to the meaning for our modern awareness, that the monologue takes place as the tomb is about to be opened, and that this, the 5,000-year-old situation, the archaeologist will be breaking into. So the speaking, it really is the soul, a version of a persona, the sola anima, the disembodied spirit. And while it seems spooky, it really is, there's a melancholy angst inside of this mummified voice, which is really quite incredible. As far as Bengt Johansson goes, he really writes primarily for amateur singers. Usually it's tonal and built on fourths and fifths, but this particular piece is built on adjacent half steps, four adjacent half steps, which are constantly realigned, expanded, verticalized, enhanced by non-pitched vocal effects, which I think you probably heard.
Yes, and I was actually thinking, I mean, for if he's traditionally writing for amateur choral groups, it seemed like some of the melodies I'm hearing sung by what I thought was a baritone were dissonant and down the challenging end of the spectrum.
Right, this is really written for for the more advanced. And our soloist for this particular piece is Dr. Robert Wells from UNCG. So it's a wonderful piece and a wonderful challenge. He loves the challenges of contemporary music. So
great. And what a great way to round out the first half of the program. We get a combination of fun and scary and a little theatrical nature of the piece as well. This is the music by Jaakko Mantajärvi and the Double Double Toil and Trouble with the text by Shakespeare.
Yes, taken from the fourth act, first scene of Macbeth, where the three witches are boiling together their brew. And if he had said it, it would have been boiling together so that you could be thrown into the brew as well. But I think Mantajärvi really captures this freneticism and sort of cackling evilness of the witches putting it together.
And then a break after the intermission. You return with the large work in the program, at least one of them, at least 20 minutes, The Unicorn, The Gorgon, and The Manticore, The Three Sundays of a Poet. And this is music by Menotti.
And libretto by Menotti as well.
Oh, the libretto as well. Okay. I love the nice use of canon fairly early on and some pretty dissonances, but some very beautiful lyrical writing as well.
It really is amazing and quite a challenge. I don't think from first hearing that people would understand what a challenge this is for singers, the amount of concentration it takes to sing and keep the story going through the 12 madrigals and the introduction and the dance interludes that are in place.
So in addition to presenting the 12 madrigals and six interludes within this piece, there's something for the visual senses going on as well.
That's correct. Menotti had originally designed the piece to be danced, and the dances occur in the 12 interludes. And given that we are performing at Christ United Methodist Church, it's not a space that is equipped to handle dancers as well as the singers. So Bel Canto contracted with the Lauren Kearns Dance Project. This was established by Lauren Kearns, who is a professor chair of dance at Elon University. And she choreographed these interludes, and we videotaped them from various angles and pieced the videotapes together. So the Menotti will be accompanied with a rear-projected film, if you will, and the text will scroll through the madrigals, and the dances will occur projected during the interludes. And so it really is bordering on multimedia film kind of presentation, which is our audiences are familiar with when we did The Passion of Joan of Arc with the Richard Einhorn piece several years ago. But this is one of those wonderful challenges. It was a project that I had presented to our board, and they eagerly accepted the challenge of it. And I have to tell you, it has challenged all of us, including myself, to make it beautiful. The plot is a comic but ultimately melancholy attack on the indifferent killers of the poet's dreams, slavish social conformity, and the ease with which the unfashionable is discarded. There have been writers, including Menotti himself, has suggested that he strongly identified with the poet in his story. The three creatures of the title are allegorical representations of stages in the poet's life, the unicorn representing the beauty and promise of youth, the gorgon representing the success and haughtiness of middle age, and the manticore representing the shy loneliness of old age. And throughout, there is this constant banter that occurs between the townsfolk, but specifically a count and the countess who, well, according to their writing for them, have a very antagonistic relationship, shall we say, and it's quite well represented by Menotti in his writing here. It really is about 40 minutes, of which only about 30 minutes is sung. The other 10 are danced.
Oh, that's a huge work.
Yes, it is.
Good gosh. You talk about sustaining that for, I mean, are there comparable works? He does do a neat mix of old and new styles or compositional techniques as well.
He does. What I found and what has been extremely challenging for Bel Canto, and one that I think that they're meeting quite well, is the concept of the madrigal, really a small ensemble form. And when you have 34 or 35 singers performing, I decided early on to break the ensemble up into various groups and assign them various parts of different madrigals, and that way we could have this conversational effect that was taking place. I could also alter the timbre, which would aid in keeping lively the sound in the room, if you will.
Sure.
And quite honestly, that has just been a real bear to pull off, and they are working so diligently. It's going well. So,
how many different little subgroups within the madrigals are there?
Oh goodness! Well, you have the count and the countess. You have the old man, and you also have the townsfolk. Those are the basic groups that are involved.
But then within that, you make distinctions of different combinations for this textural difference you're talking about?
Yeah. So, for instance, when the count and countess are arguing, I will have a small group of women, not the entire group of women, and a small group of men, not the entire group of men. And then as it builds and we get to sort of repetitious refrains, if you will, then everybody will join in. And then, for instance, when the townspeople are gossiping and bickering, that's broken down into small groups. And then in reply to their bickering, another set of small group of people will reply. And so it keeps this sort of variety and the conversational aspect of the madrigals alive.
Are they singing antiphonally at that point, or are they separated by distance?
No, actually not. Given the space and what we have, they'll all be in the same location. And quite frankly, I tried rehearsing that in split formations, but some singers are part of more than one group.
Oh, that'd be tough.
Yeah, and so it was difficult to create any cohesion, if you will.
Running back and forth is always tacky in the middle of performance, too.
Yeah, yes, it is. I've just found it easier to put women together and men together, and then those groups will come out, not literally come out, but will be, they have identified themselves inside these particular ensembles.